Oh, that's right. Good afternoon, everybody. It's an election coming up, in case you didn't know. What are we down to? 12 days, I think. Maybe 11. Maybe this day's almost gone. But on November 8th, you will have the opportunity and the decision-making possibilities for who the next sheriff of Greenwood County is going to be. Today, one of those people is sitting across the table from me. It is Dennis Kelly. He was a state trooper, and he has retired from the state and is now working hard to become the next sheriff of Greenwood County. How goes the political stuff here, Dennis?
It's long and hard, but I think we're making good progress.
How is this experience, you know, is it anything like the experience that you thought it would be, or has it been a lot different than what you thought it would be to run for sheriff?
It's been kind of close to what I thought, but it's a lot of territory to cover and a lot of people to talk to and to get your message out there on what you plan on doing. And I'm only one person, so I can only be in so many places, only one place at
anytime,
so.
Right. But has it been any harder than you thought, or have the people been receptive, and it been a what you would consider a good experience?
Well, it has. Met a lot of people. I think I knew a lot of people, but found out how many people they are in Greenwood since I started running, and but it's been a good experience talking to people and meeting new people and understanding what, you know, different people expect out of you.
Sure. And what's the biggest thing you've heard from the people that you've talked to about what they're looking for in a sheriff?
Well, of course, they want accountability, you know, hold the sheriff's department accountable. But there again, they want to make sure their community's safe. And like I say, one of the issues, the main issues, would be the drugs, and because that leads to other crimes. So those two issues is some of the main issues, but one is that they'd like to know that I'm approachable and that I will listen to them.
That's a big one. And of course, right now you're out there in the community. I would think one of the questions that you might have is, after, of course, should you be so fortunate to be the next sheriff of Greenwood County, that's going to change. You're going to have to be in the office, and you've got a big management group there to do.
That's true, but I'm going to surround myself with good people that are doing their job, and that will relieve me some to be in the community. Of course, I will have obligations and duties in the office, but I'm still going to try to be out in the community and try to understand and talk with the citizens, understand what their needs and concerns are, that we can provide a good service for them.
Sure. And as you are looking at the future here, I guess one of the things that would be a concern is how one transitions from campaigning to being the sheriff, because there, of course, Sheriff Tony Davis will be leaving. If you are the next sheriff of Greenwood County, you will have to work out some transition. Have you given any thought to how the transition would work?
Just from learning what happened in the past, that, you know, the incoming sheriffs, you know, was given an office and an officer to get them started and kind of get them on board about what it takes in everyday operations to get me up to par, so on January, when you do take office, that you're not coming in blind, so.
Sure. Well, that's what I was just thinking. And, you know, one of the issues I think that we wanted to address that's been a big issue for a lot of people here in Greenwood is the fact of the lack of control on the money in the sheriff's department. Also, there's been a lack of control, it seems, with evidence from what we've seen. Now, of course, nothing has been gone to court and been proved yet, but those are the things that are out there. So how do you see being able to give transparency and make sure that the money that is given to you through county council, through your budget, number one, is spent appropriately? And then I want to address, for example, stuff taking in for evidence, the drugs and this type of thing that we've heard about.
Right. As far as in the office and the budget, the money that's allocated to you from county council, you know, we're going to have dual accountability. No one person, you know, will be allowed to write checks or take in money. And so I think that will cut down. And hopefully, well, you got a lot of line items like payroll, vehicles, uniform stuff that you got allotted each and every year on the budget. So there's a few things we might can, you know, look at to save money. But as far as accountability, you know, we're just going to make sure that no one person has authorization or can, you know, spend or take in, you know, the money. On the evidence and the maybe confiscated money, this procedure that I think works the best is ever how you find the money, if you're confiscating it, to either take pictures or video, you know, the money as you found it and where you found it, and then you video it as you count out the money, and that's your first documentation on how much it is. And then, of course, there you seal it in evidence bags, which is, you know, if you open the bag, then the bag tears up. So that's, you know, so people understand, you know, that if somebody opened the bag,
it's not a reusable bag like a regular plastic bag.
That's correct. It's, you know, you seal it, and it's if you open it, it destroys the bag. So, and then you get your chain of custody. Anybody that's turned over to till it goes into the bank, you know, will be on the chain of custody, so you can track who handled it, and the correct amount of money makes it to the bank.
Okay. And what about as far as the drugs?
Same thing. If you
okay, we're not depositing it in the bank, though, are we?
No, but we put it.
We can have a withdrawal right from the bank. Yeah, I like it. Okay.
Yeah. No, the drugs, as far as confiscated, same thing. You video it and you put it in an evidence bag. You track it, but it goes in the evidence safe until court, and then, of course, you have ways that it is destroyed, whether it burn it to whatever is the best way. It depends on what kind of evidence it is, whether it's guns or drugs or whatever, on how you destroy it. But yeah.
But you don't see, you are going to be very careful. Is that what I'm getting out of this? That you're going to be very careful with evidence and with the money that is given to you at the Sheriff's Department?
That's correct. I think if the officers understand how I'm wanting them to handle things, and they comply with the policies and the procedures that I expect them to do, and the way I handle it, I think that will keep them accountable, and it will be less tempting for anyone to, or a way that they can't, you know, tamper with the evidence or the money.
It's been, you know, and the thing about it is, it's not just Greenwood where these type of issues are happening. They're happening all across our country. We're seeing things, and gosh, we're even seeing stuff in the federal government and our state government. So it's a big, big problem. But how do you feel working with your officers? How do you see putting together a team? What's your management style? Do you is it your way or the highway, or you have discussion, or how does it work when you're in charge there, Dennis?
Well, ultimately, you know, whatever I decide, you know, since I'm the ultimately responsible, that, you know, I got to go with what I feel is right. But I like to work with people. Everybody has different experiences and I guess different skills, and listen to other people, and how they look at it may cause me to use some of what they have and some of what I have and come to a better resolution, you know, to resolve things, because I don't know everything. So I love to listen to other people and see how they look at it, because they may give me some good advice or something they've handled in the past that would help me to make a better decision.
Sure. Now, of course, you were a highway patrol, state patrol. What made you go into that to begin with?
Actually, I was looking at the city police in Greenville, and I had applied for the highway patrol, and when they called and offered me a job, I just decided to go with the highway patrol, become state trooper.
Yeah, but I mean, originally, what made you work to go into law enforcement in to begin with? What made you decide to go in that direction?
Yeah, I don't know if there's any one incident. I remember when I was young, early on, I just always said I want to be a police officer, and that's what I always wanted to do. I worked some other jobs, and did fine with them, but just wasn't what I was wanting to do. So I finally just started applying in law enforcement, and state called me, and I did 29 years.
Now, you had some other experiences, not only with, you worked with the highway patrolman, but highway department for as a state patrolman, but included in those experiences, you've had some other detailed type work. What type of things have you done?
And I was on a SWAT team, which they call an ACERT team, but it's a SWAT team, and I was on it, and we went to a lot of different, whether manhunts to whatever major incidents were going on, and then we have our civil emergency response team, which I was over as a lieutenant for our troop, which responds to demonstrations at the state house, to hurricanes, to train derailment, the one that happened in Aiken. We have a lot of different things. Any major incident that happens in the state troopers were called, and I was involved in a lot of that. The last thing I went to was Charleston, where those 9 church members were shot. We were, you know, called in to keep the peace and help and assist in that in Charleston when all the dignitaries come in, plus the families there at the church when they were having the funerals. We assisted in keeping the peace there.
You know, that was a situation that could have gotten out of control very, very easily. I mean, we've seen it across our country. Why do you think Charleston was able to keep the peace?
Well, my opinion is no doubt that it was those church members that stood by their beliefs and their Christianity and how what they actually believed in, and their concern was for their friends and family members, and they didn't allow, you know, outside people to come in and get it distracted from what their main purpose was, to show their love for their family members and church members. If it hadn't been for them, it could have gotten just like the other states and cities that have unrest and riots. It could have very well turned to that hadn't have been for those church members.
Absolutely. You know, I think Charleston became an example for our country, you know, on how to try to deal with a situation such as that. But, and, you know, here in Greenwood, God bless, we haven't had a situation like that. But in today's world, we hear a lot about race relations and policing and the sheriff, and there's just a lot of concern about whether we're able to, can we trust the sheriff's department? Can we trust the police department, law enforcement in general? You know, we hear a lot about the black side saying that it's not fair, it's not right. How, as a sheriff, although I know we don't have a bad situation here, a situation that is not bad can turn bad very quickly.
Yeah, I just think that's my whole objective, is to gain trust from the community, be out and talk with them, see what their issues are with it, whatever part of the community is. And I think if they learn that they can trust me and that I'm going to be transparent and legally whatever I can show them, evidence-wise, videotapes, and build their trust that I'm going to do the right thing no matter who it benefits, I think that is the start to having a peaceful community. If they know they can trust and you're going to do the right thing, and most time they'll let the justice system, the court system, play out, and that justice will prevail.
Now, that brings up an interesting question. You know, you brought up videotapes. You know, there's been a lot of question in some of these cases out there where a police officer, law enforcement officer, was wearing a body cam, and whether it captured it, whether the camera was off, you know, and there seems to be sometimes questions about them working, and what was it in Charlotte? They showed part of it. They didn't show the whole thing. How do you feel about body cams, number one, about wearing them and having those as evidence? And where are we going with the transparency? On top of that, we have people with their cell phones taking cell phone videos everywhere. We wouldn't have known about what happened in Charleston with that one shooter, the police officer, and the guy that got shot, had it not been for a cell phone video. So what do you think about the video aspect of policing, I guess we could call it, or law enforcement?
Right, I think it's a good tool. If it's videoed, whether it's the car cam or the body cam, I think it's a great tool. It, you know, shows it either clears the officer, or it may show, you know, that he did something improper. And so I think that's why it's very important to use those tools. And then, of course, if you can show a video and it clearly show who was the aggressor or who did not comply with what they were required to do, I think is important. So, but on the other hand, as far as equipment, you have to realize these guys are wearing them body cameras on, in and out of the car every day, chasing suspects, whatever. So, you know, it is what it is.
Have they improved? Because I've heard that that's been one of the problems in the past, that they would fall off, that the video wouldn't be clear, or in the case of a scuffle or something, it would be very hard to see anything simply because of the movement aspect of it. You know, it's like having a cell phone video when you're trying to do a cell phone if you got to hold still in order to catch it. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, of course, technology is getting better every day, but it's still an issue, and every video and every incident that occurs is not going to be perfect. There's no way to get everything on the video at sometimes. I mean, it's just not going to happen. But I think technology, things are getting better, and I think as we go, you know, those things will work itself out.
Now, did you wear a body cam as a state patrolman?
We have them, but I was a lieutenant, so don't get me wrong, I still got out there and worked with my men because I enjoy that, and I think it's important to stay out there and work with your men to understand what they're continually going through. Things change over time, and, you know, it's a lot different now than it was when I came on 29 years ago. So I think it's important to be out there and working with your men. But to answer your question, I did not have one, but a lot of the troopers were starting to get them since they've passed that law about them giving them body cams, you know, as the money is there, then, you know, they'll all get them. But I was in supervision, so it's more important to have your road guys have those cameras on because they're a whole lot more likely to get involved in an incident than I would have.
Sure. Now, as far as supervision, how many sheriff's deputies, people working in the administrative part, how many people actually work at the sheriff's office?
Officer-wise, I think there's about 75, 76 uniformed officers, and then I think there's 40-something personnel in the jail, and then you have your 911 dispatch operators, and then, of course, you have your office administrative people, the ladies working records, and so forth. So it's, a good many.
About 120, 130 people, maybe? Is that what you're thinking? 76
maybe.
And 40, yep. Yeah. Somewhere around 120, I'd say, at least.
Yeah,
but
at least.
How do you feel as administratively being over this whole operation?
Well, I think it's something in my past experience, being a lieutenant and being over our CERT team and also having seven counties that I supervise. So I have to deal with a lot of people and a lot of different personalities, whether it's police chiefs to sheriffs in different counties. And I think that helps me come into the department and assist me in being a people person and being able to manage people, being a leader.
Being a leader. Okay. So you feel good about getting into that role?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Because that's a big role. But you're saying with your experience working the seven counties and being over. Now, how many people were you over when you were a lieutenant with the Highway Patrol?
Well, go up and down, but I think when I left, we were around 60 people, just troopers on the road. Of course, we had, you know, a few secretaries, but mostly the troopers that I supervised was about 60, I'm thinking, when I left.
Okay.
And then, of course, as a lieutenant, when we go on special assignments, whether it's at the state house, whatever, a lot of times I would be supervising troopers from different parts of the state that would come in as part of the CERT team, our Civil Emergency Response Team. So, you know, it depended on what the situation was, how many there that I would, you know, be involved in supervising.
I tell you, one of the things that I was most impressed about was when we went to Cleveland to the Republican convention, and we were walking around, and of course there were officers from all around the country, but was to run across a group of guys from South Carolina out of Newberry, and they were right there as a group there helping to protect, and I will say that I thought that how they ran that with all the people that they brought in from across the country, all the state highway patrol patrolmen that were there. There were people from California on bikes. There was people from Texas on horses. I mean, you know, you had the whole gamut. But we, Emerald and I, were just walking down the street, and they were always very courteous. They were always saying, "Is everything okay? Are you doing all right?" And we happened to look over, and there was a badge that said South Carolina. And we said, "Where are y'all from? Newberry?"
Yes, ma'am.
That was pretty wild.
Yeah, those were troopers from my troop, what I did. But I don't know if a lot of people is aware. See, we handle the governor's convention down at Hilton Head, and the state troopers, we send a lot of guys down there to coordinate and provide protection for the governors that come from all over the U.S. for their convention every year.
Mm. So it really is, it has to be kind of hard, though, because you could end up working with people you really didn't know. There has to be some code that makes things work, or a power, you know, that makes it work coming down the line.
Right. Well, you just find in my line of work and working with so many different people how important it is to work together, because you're all trying to accomplish the same mission, and if you don't work together and you pull against each other, you can't accomplish what you're there for, and the safety and the confidence in the community would definitely go a lot smoother if you're working together, and they'll see that. They can tell when people's, you know, working together or when they're pulling against each other, and I think that's very important.
Absolutely. Well, we are here with Dennis Kelly. We are going to join South Carolina News, and then we'll be back. If you've got a question, give us a call, 229-7984. That's 229-7984. We'll be right back.
Gold, gold, more precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
Oh, that's right. We're right back here, Sharp Facets Gallery, this afternoon. I'm Ann Eller. I am talking with Dennis Kelly. He does want to be the next sheriff of Greenwood County. I know that you have a lot of anticipation over these next 11 days. And, of course, then it is the election. That's got to be nerve-wracking.
It is. To some degree, it's pretty... It's just anticipation, waiting on the outcome of the vote, but I guess just part of it.
It is part of it. You know, one of the things that I was thinking about when we think about training and being on it, there's, of course, drugs. You've got drugs to deal with. You've got criminal activity. But then there's also domestic abuse, and that is one thing that Governor Haley has made a center point with their Commission for Domestic Abuse, and the way it has been handled in the past and the way it's being handled now, I understand, is supposed to be different. What do you think, Dennis? You've been in law enforcement for 29 years.
That's right.
So what, have you seen a difference? Do you think that we are making any inroads into that?
Well, it's still very high in South Carolina, but I think we're making strides in that because of the change in the law now. If the officer, you know, can determine an aggressor, or if there has been an abuse, or if you have witnesses, you know, without having a warrant, then they can legally go ahead and arrest the person. So that's different than what it was years ago. So I think in that aspect we're doing better, but I think... there again, church, civic groups, getting people educated, and people just coming forth if they have an abusive situation to where they get counseling and help, I think would go a long ways.
But it's kind of hard, because it's one of those things that for many, many years women have, I mean, not that men don't get abused too, but from, you know, it's been a larger majority of women that have been abused, and they have been fearful to come forth. How do we really, are we training officers how to deal with this better? Do you feel that more training would be needed for officers and people that work this? Even the people that work the 911 lines need to be aware more, maybe more aware of how to deal with this.
Well, I mean, that's true. They have to kind of sort through information they're getting. There again, with the information they get, that's how they respond, and that's what they give out. But I think, of course, any updated training and new techniques that they can, or that we can get to our officers to assist them in protecting the women is and the men is very important. And but like I say, that's if somebody calls in a disturbance in an apartment, in a house, whatever, and the officers now, like I say, it's a little different. If they can go and determine aggressor or see evidence that they have been, you know, beat or struck, you know, then without the person that was assaulted's permission, they can still, you know, they can make an arrest and hopefully.
Well, I think part of the problem with domestic abuse, hasn't it been that for years a woman can say, yeah, this happened to me, and then when it comes time to go to court, they can back out. What you're saying is the law has been changed.
As far as making arrests, but now still in court, as far as the prosecution,
yes.
It's very important that she, you know, sticks to the facts and how it happened. If she decides not to testify or changes her story, then of course it's going to be very difficult to convict someone of domestic violence because they still have their day in court.
That's right. And, you know, talking about being the day in court and this type of thing, part of what the Sheriff's Department, of course, works with the solicitor's office.
That's correct.
And I know one of the frustrations sometimes has been on the Sheriff's office is how fast a case can move through the system, how involved they are with it. Have you been able to have any conversations with Solicitor Stumbo? Or
I have, but I haven't discussed specifically caseload and how backlogged it might be here in Greenwood. But in over the 29 years, I've worked with different solicitors in different districts from when I was assigned in Greenville 11 years. And it just depends on how many arrests are made, how many cases are in the that they have to prosecute. They can't get to but so many, you know, there's not so many hours in the day, so they have to select, you know, maybe higher profile cases to get through the system. And it's just and I hate to say it, but a lot of it goes back to funds and budget. You know, the more prosecutors you have, you'd have to have more judges to carry the cases in front of. So a lot of it has to do with money. And it's just a tough situation. And as much crime's going on, it's just hard to get a lot of the cases into court and to come forward with them. So.
And also, talking about that, we're talking about the jails and the detention center and everything. That is one of the jobs that you are over, right, over the detention center?
That'd be correct. The sheriff's over the jail, the Greenwood Detention Center.
And, you know, I can remember in the past having issues with how many people were in the jail, overcrowding in the jail, this type of thing. How would you see moving forward, and do you see any issues with our detention center? I know they put a new roof on it. I know some maintenance has been done. I know a new jail is off the table, I would say, for right now. So how would you, what do you see as far as maintaining and keeping the jail in good shape for the future?
Well, your employees that are employed over there, of course, they would be required, you know, to report any deficiencies or whether it's mechanical to just toilets to whatever that's malfunctioning. We will definitely, you know, keep abreast of all those issues and try to keep them up.
And how do you get people from just leaving the jail? Because, you know, that happened here real recently. That was an interesting case.
Yeah, well, you know, they have policies over there, but the thing, you got to make sure that your sentence, when it comes from court, and it goes to the clerk, and it has to be filed there, that we get a copy from the clerk's office. And hopefully, if when somebody's sentenced to jail or released, if they're released, they have to have a release from the judge. So hopefully we're going to get our officers to make sure they get that documentation either from the judge, if it's a release, a signed release, which will be then given to the detention's officer, so we don't have a confusion about whether they're to stay or whether to go. So we're going to try to...
How did that happen the other day?
I have no idea.
Yeah,
I don't have any information on that one. Okay. I mean, I read in the paper that somebody got released, but how it happened, I'm not sure.
Okay. Because, you know, that right there creates concern within the community.
That's correct. Well, like I said, I think if you got certain things in place and make sure the court officers are assigned there, that they, when they carry a inmate back across the street that they have the correct documentation, whether it's a release or whether they're to stay or whether they're transported to another facility if they're doing some years. So I think if we make sure our officers understand the importance and to the detention officers, they understand if they're not clear on what the instructions are, that they call and get some clarification on what they're to do. But I just, there again, supervision, I think policies that they follow, I think will be fine.
Okay, all right. Well, another part I think that you handle is also the juvenile justice. What do you do with, and where do you think that we're having our most increase in crime as a general topic? Where do you think we're having our most increase?
Geographical, usually it's in the lower income areas and people that do not finish school and do not, I guess, maybe feel they have a purpose. And then sometimes it's just out of greed. They're trying to maybe make money quicker without having a job, just, whether it's stealing to selling drugs or whatever. Sometimes it's financial profit for them. But lower income and uneducated areas, and that's why I feel it's very important to work with the young people, with the educators here. I had the Greenwood Promise the other day, which is an excellent program to ensure the youth that they have a future, and if they work on their education, they're guaranteed that they can go to Piedmont Tech and continue their education and get better jobs. And I think if they feel like they have a purpose in life, I think that will cut down definitely on our crime rate.
Okay. I know you can't open up the Index Journal any day without seeing half a dozen people that have been arrested for various crimes all across the county, from whether it's Ware Shoals, Greenwood, 96, etc. This just seems to be such a waste of life in so many cases.
It is, and that's why I think it's so important, and I keep harping on church groups, civic groups, community, families. I mean, it starts at home. If you have a good, don't get me wrong, some people make bad choices, but I think it's statistics have shown if you have a good, strong family life to church involved in
course, how do you get there, though? How do you get there? I think it's great, but how do you get there? We have so many fractured families. We have a lot of women raising children on their own, no fathers, no male figure in the family. How do you get from that point of knowing that that's what is needed? How do you get there? That's the question that always gets me.
Well, I mean, you can't get to everybody, I guess, but we hopefully do, but again, I think it's up to, it's not government, it's not the police. I think it's mainly, of course, now sheriff's office, we would assist any way we could, going talking to youth, being involved in some things, but it starts with the churches and the civic groups out trying to recruit kids in to get them involved in things instead of crime, but get them involved, whether it's chorus, like say band, athletics, painting, art, theater, whatever it is, and keep them involved and make them understand that people care about them and they want them to succeed. I think that's the main issue.
Okay. Well, as we move forward here, we've got time for a few more questions, so I'm going to think about what question I want to ask. If you've got a question and want to give us a call, 229-7984, we'll be right back. Don't you go away.
McDonald's presents Confessions of an Ex-Hipster.
I loved cappuccinos, so I put on an itchy turtleneck and grew a goatee. But before I knew it, I was into French films, indie rock, and not bathing. Luckily, I got help from McDonald's McCafe cappuccinos. Now I'm watching football, wearing khakis, even high-fiving again. Thank you, McDonald's.
New McCafe mochas, lattes, and cappuccinos from McDonald's. With fresh ground espresso and real steamed milk, it's all the coffee, hold the attitude. At participating McDonald's.
Visit your local McDonald's in Greenwood and Abbeville today.
You know, I was just thinking about, most of the time when we see the highway patrolmen and those blue lights go flashing, they're stopping you for either a taillight hour, a speeding ticket. I'm just curious, Dennis, since we're here with Dennis Kelly this afternoon, who wants to be the next sheriff. What kind of experiences have you had as a state patrol? How do you has that experience prepared you for this type of job? Because, like I said, I think most people think of stopping you for a speeding ticket. They're always hiding somewhere to get you. So, how does your experience in what you did prepared you for the experience for this job now?
Right. A lot of people don't realize what all state troopers do in their job, but after 29 years of service, started out in Greenville for 11 years, I got promoted to corporal, first line supervision, but over the years have investigated many deaths just in Troop 2, which is seven counties. We had averaged about 50 deaths a year that we were responsible for investigating, or me as a supervisor made sure the investigations were covered. But we deal with all kind of fugitives, money confiscations, weapon confiscations. Of course, I was an evidence custodian for 10 years, which will help me in the Sheriff's Department as far as maintaining control of the monies and the drugs. But I've been to all kind of training. Anytime there's any major incidents in the state, us as state troopers, we got sent. And, of course, being a lieutenant, I was sent to the Carolinas Institute for Community Policing, which is very important that you're out in your community policing, so it builds a strong relationship with the citizens. And I've been to U.S. Department of Homeland Security training for major incident command training to resolutions for major incidents anywhere in the state. So I think having all that training and supervising people for 23 years. I started in and worked my way up through the ranks to lieutenant. So I just think a lot of people don't understand what all we go to, like we talked about earlier, to Charleston when those nine church members got shot. I mean, we just have a lot of different experience in a lot of different areas that we are assigned to all over the state. And I think that would definitely help me. And, of course, work with the criminal justice, juvenile justice. We have to care, you know, juveniles to Columbia, go through the system, working with solicitors. And as a trooper, you work different parts of the state, so you deal with a lot of different solicitors and a lot of different courts. And you just learn to deal with a lot of different people. And I think that would help me in working with the Sheriff's Department as a sheriff.
Now, I can see that. I think, though, a lot of people don't understand what a highway patrolman does. Now, as far as the people that work for you in the sheriff's department, will you bring, number one, your experience with your training, but also will you make sure that our officers are trained, our sheriff's deputies are trained in the techniques and seek out ways to make sure that they know how to deal with situations?
Yeah, I think it's vital. And there again, being part of a professional organization, the South Carolina Department of Public Safety, we've always had good training, been out front, try to get the training before we have the issues. When we see things that are trending in other parts, other cities, other states, and being with them, I've realized how important the training is, and we'll do everything we can to make sure our officers are trained in the areas they need to be trained so they can react and do a good investigation to the solicitor's office through the prosecution of cases, because if they're trained well and they make good cases, then we should have more convictions.
That's right. And then on the other side, as far as building the trust with the community so that when we have a situation that the people in the community are, I'll use the word, on your side, believe that the Sheriff's Department is working it truthfully and transparently. That would be, I would think, the other side of the coin.
It most definitely is. If they learn they can trust you, majority of the crimes, a lot of the crimes from burglaries to drugs in your neighborhood, as citizens, if they trust me or trust the whole Sheriff's Department, they're more openly will call you and give you information, and we can clear up a whole lot more cases and hopefully move some of the drugs out of some areas if the citizens trust us and call us and know that we're going to be fair with them and whoever's, you know, in the neighborhood, and that we will, you know...
I think that's an interesting issue, because we used to have, I think we still have, what is it called? God, it just went out of my mind, where you could make an anonymous call and say that you saw drugs going in this house, or you know
Crime
this
Stoppers.
Crime Stoppers.
Yeah.
And now I understand they have moved that to a statewide platform instead of a local platform. But I think that is another side of it. The sheriff's office and the police department needs to not expose that person that gave you that piece of information.
That's right. Confidentiality is huge, and the trust, because if you don't tell who give you the information. But on the other hand, if they just tell us they're selling drugs at a house, we still got to have probable cause to go in just because they tell us.
Right.
You know, we're not allowed just to go in a house and arrest somebody. But
sure.
But still, it gives us an area that we know we need to look at. And me as a sheriff and officers working in the community, you know, they will have our numbers that they can get in touch with us so we can follow up without actually having to give their information out. I think it'd be vital to building trust is to build that relationship with the citizens so they will call us.
You know, I think another issue is Greenwood County is so large. And, of course, we only have so many sheriff's deputies that can be out there. That's another issue, is having to be able to depend on your cities, whether it's Ware Shoals or 96 or Greenwood. How do you see working with these other communities?
Well, and I think I've done that over the years. And like I say, as a lieutenant, I've even had to work with different sheriffs in different counties to different police chiefs. But here in Greenwood, you got Ware Shoals, 96, you got Greenwood Police Department, you have the transport police officers, got the troopers. And I've always learned that if you work together to accomplish the same mission, you get a whole lot more accomplished. And I've always had a good rapport with all the agencies that I've worked with, from even when I started up in Greenville, worked Spartanburg and Anderson, and I think it's going to be very important to continue that. As me as a sheriff, I think it would be one of my priorities.
Absolutely. So, Dennis, we're coming up to the top of the hour here. I wanted to give you a couple of minutes here to tell the folks why they should vote for you on November 8th and how it is, how important it is to get out there and vote on November 8th.
Well, I'd like them to know that I'm concerned about the community of Greenwood since I grew up here and I was raised here. My wife of 32 years is from here, and I understand how people want to have a safe community, and we're going to build that trust and continue to work. But I think just as having the officers out in the community, and they will realize from 29 years of my experience has been state and local law enforcement, been in supervision for 23 years, and I think I just bring a lot to the table as far as supervising and managing people as I have in the past 29 years. And, of course, you know, investigated many reckless homicides to felony deaths, gun charges, fugitives. Just got a broad range of experience dealing with a lot of the issues that we would run into from being on the SWAT team and the Civil Emergency Response Team. I just think I got a lot of experience that I have gained over the years that will help me to serve the citizens of Greenwood.
Well, I guess we'll find out, won't we?
Yes, ma'am.
That's right. Hey, we have been talking today with Dennis Kelly. He is running for sheriff of Greenwood County. He will be on the ballot as the Republican candidate for sheriff. So I hope you've learned something in this interview this afternoon. You are listening to WCRS right here in Greenwood. And Dennis, all the best to you. Thanks for coming out today.
Thank you for having me.
All right. This is WCRS right here in Greenwood. Bye-bye, everybody.